Way of the Warrior, your MMA show.
10 seconds.
He rolls into it.
Wow, he might get it. Take it.
Way of the Warrior.
One of his legs could fight at welterweight, I'm sure.
Probably.
Roll mount, here's some ground, and pound by O'Gara.
I think the first 2 minutes were everything we thought it was going to be, and then after that, it was the surprise of the night.
If it happens in MMA, you hear about it here. Your MMA show, Way of the Warrior.
It is Way of the Warrior, Eric Hallgren, along with Ken Evans, doing the first show of 2016.
And Happy New Year,
Happy
Eric.
New Year to you as well, my friend. And it is very cold here in the Midwest, as it's trending on Twitter as Too Cold Tuesday. So we are here on Too Cold Tuesday to talk about UFC 195. And I'm assuming at some point we will get into the discussion of what exactly the judging criteria, or at least I'd like to get into what exactly the judging criteria is. So that
seems
you can,
pretty good right now. What,
that you can
what,
have a,
what are
well,
we going to talk about?
So we're obviously going to start there, and I think it may or may not seem pretty good right now, or you know whatever you're going to say about it. I think that there needs to be some understanding that there's a lot of people not doing a very good job of explaining exactly what happened here. So for those of you who think Carlos Condit won, I understand why you feel that way.
Mm-hmm.
And for those of you who feel Robbie Lawler won, you feel vindicated. I understand that way. But when you look at the rules, according to the UFC's website, and you look at the adjustments they made in 2012, and you go back, here's the one thing that Sean Dazai taught us, and I think is vital when you're trying to understand a fight like this. You have to go back and watch it with the sound off,
mm-hmm.
because the announcers are driving you to make a decision in your mind, conscious or subconscious, that you might not be paying attention to. So when Joe Rogan tells you that he thinks Carlos Condit won that round,
mm-hmm.
it's not up to him. And you need to understand, before we get into the nuance of this,
should it be up to Joe Rogan? Let us know on Facebook and Twitter.
Well, the one thing that you need to know is that you can look at fight metrics all day long, and you can look at strike counts all day long. The judges don't see that.
Mm-hmm.
They do not get to see that data. So they are not making the same educated decision that you are making in your mind.
Okay, so just so we're clear, we're 48-47, 48-47, 47-48 in favor of the champion.
Correct.
And Lawler wins the fight. So think about that. Two fighters, five rounds, 1 point separated them. After you do all the addition and the subtraction and figure everything out there. That's pretty amazing. That's still a pretty close fight.
It's a super close fight, and I think it's even a little bit closer, Ken, because one of the things that the 10-point must system doesn't do is give you the nuance within the round. Now, the 10-point must system came out of boxing, designed for 2 or 3 minute rounds, 12 rounds in totality. So when you think about it, as Ken just said, 1 point. If you lose a point in round three, you have 9 other rounds to kind of make that up,
mm-hmm.
right? And remember, you're only using 2 weapons in boxing, a left and a right. Far easier to score it that way than when you're trying to deal with takedowns, submission attempts, octagon control.
See, here's the thing I'm a little confused about, because I know Joe Rogan then went on Twitter and Facebook, and he's been talking about different things all week, but
sure.
One of the first things I saw was him talking about the fact we need half-point systems. Do we need half-point systems? We have a 10-point must. I think we just need a system where judges are more willing to hand out 10-8s and maybe 10-7s.
Well, here's where it gets crazy. When you do some research, you would think 10-point must system. Okay, so we'll go back to the prelim card where Edgar Garcia is taking on Sheldon Westcott.
Okay.
It's the very first fight on Fight Pass. And Sheldon Westcott just annihilates Edgar Garcia. If that round were to finish, and Edgar did not get finished on the ground, if that round would have gone to the end of the 5 minutes, there is no way, if you're using the 10-point must system, that you would score it any other way than 10-0,
mm-hmm.
because Edgar did nothing.
Right.
However, that doesn't actually exist.
No, I know that. What is it? The best you can get if you're a fighter and you don't finish the fight is, what, a 10-7?
Right, and in New Jersey, you can go, there are states that will allow you to go lower, but in New Jersey, you can go no lower than 7. 10-7 is as low as you can go.
Well, that's as low as the UFC will go. They won't sanction differently than basically the most restrictive
right.
sanctioning body. So if you go to the UFC website and you look at scoring, 10-7 is the lowest you can go. I looked up the actual verbiage on a 10-7, and here's what we've got, Eric, and this is going to kind of fuel the discussion. Do we need different judging? Do we need different point systems? 10-7. A round is to be scored 10-7 when a contestant totally dominates by striking or grappling in a round. So if you use that criteria, we probably should see more 10-7s.
Yep. Well, I mean, this is why I use this. This one would have been 10-7.
So which round?
Well, no. If you go to this fight pass, if it had gone to the end,
yeah.
I was using, there was a fight where somebody just got absolutely annihilated,
right.
Had no offense at all.
And at best, we see 10-8s.
And at best, right, and you've never seen a 10-7.
Yeah, if anybody knows a 10-7, let us know. Twitter, Facebook, whatever, because we were trying to figure out today if we had one, and I haven't seen one. I don't think we need a new, yes, this is adjusted from boxing, but it's still fighting. And they have made some adjustments within the rules. Both fighters are standing, striking rules the round, and you score it that way. Both fighters are on the ground, grappling rules the round, you score it that way. Which becomes very interesting, though, because we do have the nuance. If somebody can win a striking battle on the ground, and you've got a situation where, oh, okay, was the other guy grappling better? Is that effective grappling?
Well, and why 195 is so important to this discussion is you saw all of that. Again, to go back to Fight Pass, if you look at the Joe Soto-Tanaka fight, Joe Soto had 4 really good submission attempts. He didn't finish, but he had 4 really good submission attempts and lost the fight. And I think there is where you can make the argument that you've got judges that don't actually understand what is happening on the ground, therefore cannot score. If Joe Soto has Tanaka in a go-go plata for 5 minutes,
mm-hmm.
is a judge going to give it 10-7? Probably not.
Right.
But they probably should.
Right. And the interesting thing, too, is when you start looking at these rules and let's go to the scorecards and figure out where things broke down. And that's essentially that third round. The third round is where, in this fight, Lawler won on 2 of the scorecards. That
right.
gave him the fight. Condit won on the other one. I think the other scores were essentially the same for the judges. I'm just verifying right now. Yes, they every other round was scored exactly the same, it looks like, between the judges on all 3 cards. So that comes down to 1 round. I asked you this question immediately following the fights.
Yep.
I rarely send you a text because I know you got a new baby. And I don't know if you're sleeping for 5 minutes and
right.
you have a new baby, that's precious.
Right, exactly.
So turn your phone off. That's
right.
That's your own lesson at this point.
Fair enough.
So I rarely try to text you as late as I did, but I wanted to know what you thought about the third round. You told me you thought Lawler won.
And here's why. I understand why people thought Condit won. What I saw was a really, for that whole third round, a really terrible camera angle from behind Lawler.
Mm-hmm.
So you're not seeing any of Lawler's action. You're only seeing Condit,
mm-hmm.
which gives you, again, the bias or the perception that Condit wins that round. Now, I'm not going to argue the nuance of it. What I would say in both the third round and the fifth round, and this is the thing I would like to adapt if we're going to do anything to judging, I would like to figure out how to do this. In the third round and the fifth round, you had 2 rounds within each one of those rounds. By that, I mean, in the third round, I saw it that Condit won the first 2.5 minutes. Lawler won the second 2.5 minutes. How do you score that?
Well, I think you look at this, and we rarely try to pull out the rules and regulations because a lot of times
I'm only doing it now because I mean this is
instinctually you want to judge a fight, and I'm going to tell you instinctually I judge that round for Condit, and I know he didn't land as many strikes as Lawler. But I thought he did more damage. And that's kind of that old school pride mentality when you kind of looked at that list of fighting. Oh, how much damage did he do? The fighters are even. How much damage did he do? With fewer strikes in that round, although in the whole fight that wasn't the case at all, with fewer strikes in that round, he was able to do more damage than the plinking. I'm going to call it plinking.
Okay.
That Lawler did in that round. But the interesting thing is when I go to dig up the rules and regulations and go, well, where's damage in here? I'm not finding damage.
They haven't updated. However, there is an article that shows that in 2012, there was a meeting of the Athletic Commission where they did shift these rules slightly to indicate that heavier strikes score more than volume of strikes.
Right.
So in that ruling, in the third round, using that set of criteria, Condit would win if that, in fact, was true.
Yes, but that's saying an effective strike that's harder, okay, that should score more than one that's less. But what we don't have is, does that trump legal effective strikes, which is essentially the rule that we've been dealing with for 20 years.
Right.
And that rule is effective striking is judged by determining the total number of legal strikes. That's not power punches. That's not damaging strikes. That's legal strikes. So what you had in this round is you had both guys basically on one side, you had Condit with power punches, is what
yep.
we just kind of
sure.
to simplify everything.
Yes.
Power strikes, damaging strikes. And then you had Lawler with a ton of legal strikes. Now, I still think Condit did more damage in that round. And as the fight as a whole, I don't know if you watched any of those post-fight pressers. Usually, a dude looks like that. They don't let him go to the pressers or do the interviews. And I, you know, Lawler's a tough dude, and that's kind of his thing at this point, and he ends up winning the championship. You know, you don't want him in the hospital and Condit sitting next to you
right,
on stage.
Right.
Even if you're Dana White and you're going to say, I think Carlos Condit won that fight. Man, I looked at him after the fight, and you could tell, you know, a good 20 minutes after when they do the UFC Tonight on Fox Sports.
FS1, yeah.
By the way, if you're a fan and you're still up and you just kind of leave it on the pay-per-view and let it roll or what, flip over. I mean, they get some of the best content. And for those of you who maybe didn't watch a pay-per-view, that's the best footage you'll see because it only runs in that show.
And
usually.
They run it once, and then that's it.
Yeah, I mean, they don't run everything. Like, we didn't get to see the KO of Stipe Miocic over Arlovski, which we'll talk about in a bit. But they run a lot of the footage that you don't actually see, again, legally anywhere unless you bought the pay-per-view. So just a tip for you there. But, you know, to see the damage that he landed, I thought it was interesting to kind of see him do the post-fight interviews. Tyron Woodley was one of the commentators, which was really interesting
right,
to kind of
right.
watch happen as, you know, they talked about this. And then Carlos, the rumor that Carlos was going to retire broke during the post-fight show. So
because he said that to Ariel. Like, Ariel was like,
right.
are you going to retire? And he said, I could.
It actually had broken before that, though, because
oh,
Dana
yeah.
had mentioned it.
Yeah.
And then he did it with the Ariel Helwani interview. So it was kind of interesting to see all that. Going back to what we said, damage-wise, you know, Lawler's a tough guy. So does he get the credit being able to take the damage? According to the rules, my interpretation, even though my gut instinct on that third round is Carlos Condit, he does. Now, do I still think he won that round? I don't think he won that round. I just think if you're in there and you're peppering and you're doing what he did, and it's a championship-level fight. I mean, those aren't light punches. That's not what I'm saying. But versus what Carlos Condit did in that round, I think Carlos won that round. So we go back to the judging. I'm really surprised we're talking so much, though, about egregious judging in this instance.
But it
seems interesting.
I did not say egregious.
No, but it online, come on.
Yeah,
the sentiment,
well, okay, online.
Like, if Joe Rogan's going to go off, this is the fight you pick?
Right.
Like a third round that could have really gone either way?
And I think Chuck Mendenhall wrote
one point after right. five rounds and two fighters?
Right. Chuck Mendenhall hit it on the head. And this is something that you should listen to as I say it, is you can be as mad as you want about the decision, but you have to love the hell out of Robbie Lawler.
Yeah.
Right? Robbie Lawler and Carlos Condit have nothing to do with your thoughts on the judging.
Well, think about the welterweight division now as versus the GSP era.
Sure.
I mean, how many of those GSP fights, you and I, as MMA fans, we're probably good tonight.
Right.
You going anywhere? No, I'm not going anywhere. You going to order it?
I don't think so.
Probably not. No, not tonight. Not unless he's fighting a Diaz or Carlos Condit, you know, something like that, and then the Johnny Hendricks. And they got more interesting at the end, and then George St. Pierre said, hey, we're done with
too
this.
Too interesting, leaving.
Right, exactly. That's not what I'm here for. Rumors he's coming back, though. Keep building.
Yeah.
But Lawler,
because that would be great, right?
Yeah, You know, in these fights, when Robbie Lawler's in a fight, if it went to the decision, it's not because Robbie Lawler took it to the decision. It's because he was trying to finish the fight, and he was in there against a tough-as-hell fighter, which Carlos Condit is. I mean, I think you might have two of the toughest fighters, not just in the division, but in the UFC between those two guys.
And I would say, regardless of your thoughts on the decision, probably one of the best welterweight fights you've seen in a long time.
Which says a whole lot about
a long time.
Robbie Lawler, considering that Lawler-McDonald fight.
Right. I mean, you know, yes, Robbie looked worse after the Roy McDonald fight, but I think as a whole, because he had the crazy split lip in half,
remember?
Right.
Like, yeah, but did you see him marked up UFC tonight?
I saw him, but like he didn't have like half of his mouth hanging
out. He looked
up.
Like he got attacked by a tiger.
It was weird. He got attacked by Carlos.
It was weird because he looked like he just had weird scratches on his face. He's like that guy when, like, your chick goes crazy.
Right, and scratches
and you
all
you can't
yeah.
do anything about right. it because then the cops are going to get called and you're yes. going to get blamed even though you look like, you know, Siegfried.
Interesting turn of events in
the
show.
After he got attacked.
Okay, right.
So, anyways, Lawler got attacked by a tiger. So who should he fight next?
I mean, look, this is the one. If Carlos is not retiring, this is the fight you make.
I don't think Carlos is going to retire if he had another championship fight.
This is the only fight to make at this point.
It was very interesting to watch Tyron Woodley, though, have to address this on the post-fight show. Because He said a lot of the things we've been saying, but the problem is he said them after such an amazing fight. There's too many rematches. If the challenger doesn't win, there shouldn't be a rematch. Why are we rematching a fight? We made the fight. They're two good fighters. We expect a great fight. Just because there's a great fight doesn't mean there's a rematch. And I agree with him on all his points. He had his points lined up, and they were all well made. But the problem is you were making all these points after this fight. This was probably one of the best championship fights we've seen in a while.
Hands down.
And even with the Rory McDonald fight and those guys both being tough as hell and lasting through the fight, Rory didn't look like he had that fight at any point. They just both looked like hell at the end of it. In this fight, they went back and forth. 1 point out of 100. Let's remember, this is a 10-point must system. That's 100 points up for grabs. 1 point difference for these two fighters. I respect where Tyron Woodley's coming from. I understand he's waiting for a shot. I understand one of the dudes in that fight he put out of the fight business for a while. And now people are saying, oh, not only did he fight the guy, but now he might have a rematch against the guy. You know, he was very collected during the post show. I didn't see any frustration on his face, so to speak, but you could tell that he was just kind of looking around the room like, come on, guys, are we just going to keep doing rematches? And, Daniel Cormier saying he wanted to see a rematch, and some of the other fighters on the set there, it was kind of interesting to just watch Tyron Woodley during that post-fight show.
And let me say, Woodley is one of my favorite. I think by and large, 170 is my favorite weight class, so all of those guys I'm really into. And so, again, when you talk about 85 and you talk about 70 and certainly 155, any one of those guys in a title fight, I'm not going to argue with you.
Mm-hmm.
In this particular case, though, I think, again, to go back to the argument that we've been beating like a dead horse for the better part of a month, if you're going to do it with Ronda, if you're going to do it with Jose, if you're going to do it with Weidman, if you're going to do it with Kane,
the only difference in that argument is all of those are former belt holders. And I know Condit, and all of those were champions, right? Is that what we're talking about? I can't remember if Kane.
Yeah, I guess. Okay.
So they were all champions that lost their belt. I can see more of an argument in that instance than a challenger who didn't necessarily win the belt. But it was a close fight, and it was only 1 point.
Okay, well, then let me argue from a different angle. If you're going to do the same thing with Gustafson.
Yes. Okay. There you go.
Gustafson. Gustafson did have to take a fight between his mm-hmm. two fights between John Jones and DC.
Right.
But same result.
Got back in there, and he came off a loss.
Got back in there. Same result, right? Because he's always the bridesmaid, never the bride.
Mm-hmm.
And he's the guy. You know, I tweeted half joking on Sunday that, well, all you have to do is just, if you want to fix the scoring, tell the challenger if he doesn't finish the fight, he loses. Problem solved.
Right.
Right?
Like, old school NWA
problem
territory
solved.
Rules
right.
Back in the pro wrestling
if you
days.
Don't, if you don't beat him, you don't win.
Right. You got to beat the man.
Yeah,
be the man.
We'll call it the Ric Flair rule.
There
if you don't
go.
Do the Ric Flair rule, you don't, you know. But that said, I think as you're looking at 2016 and...
Should the champion get a nod? This is kind of a little bit of a discussion that's popped up this week, too.
What do you mean?
In a round, like the third round, does the champion get a nod there? Like, okay, I think it's even. This guy hit harder, but he hit a lot more. Champion, you've got the belt. You get the nod.
I think, I think you're seeing that in some of these fights that are so close.
I think you are. Do you agree with it?
Well, I don't know.
It's hard to be, I get what you're saying. It's hard to be in an all else is equal situation.
Well, I think, you know, not having the opportunity to sit and judge one of these, I think it's easy to play armchair quarterback and saying, of course you can turn your bias off, but you can't. You know the body of work of both of these guys, and you know what Robbie Lawler's like, and you know at the last 10 seconds of all of these rounds, Robbie Lawler's going to bring it to you like
mm-hmm.
he always does.
Yes.
So I think by and large, you're seeing... echoes, even though some of these guys never judged Pride, you're seeing echoes of that that aggression scoring mechanism from Pride. You know, that
right.
last 10 seconds, if you turn it on, you can change that judge's mind so they forget the last 4 minutes and 50 seconds.
Well, and I mean, that is because we've got to look at all the rules. Effective aggressiveness is on the list. So that's not even
as
just
a whole, though. Just... Not like it doesn't say. In the last 10 seconds, wipe out the rest of the stuff you saw in said round and score on the aggression
no,
that you...
No, not at all, but it's still one of the criteria that's
sure.
in there. So it's just an interesting setup. Maybe my favorite quote of the night was then, right next to Tyron Woodley, Daniel Cormier calling for the Damian Maia, Robbie Lawler fight, too, as the next fight after the rematch. It was a lot of fun watching that show because he was poking Tyron Woodley a little bit there.
It certainly was, but I mean, again, what does Maya need to do at this point?
So you want to see the Damian Maya fight before? Not before Woodley, though, right?
Not necessarily before Woodley, but he certainly should have it this year.
Yeah, I have no problem with that.
Certainly should have it this year.
The thing, too, is I don't think Tyron wants to have to fight it. I think he's earned his shot. I really do.
Yeah, but
I wouldn't mind Tyron Woodley, Damian Maya.
But this is what I was telling you when we were talking about Ronda and Holly, is that you've got these guys that don't make money unless they get in these big fights because they're, I mean, Woodley's on TV, so he's a little bit of a different animal.
Right, but he's still not fought for the championship yet.
Right, he hasn't fought for the championship. But when we go back and we talk about Holly Holm or Miesha Tate, like these are people that are kind of waiting on the sideline to make money in fighting. And so I understand that frustration where if you haven't had a title fight that you've been sitting around forever since you put Carlos Condit on the shelf.
Right,
Who just got a title fight. I understand the frustration, and I understand that it probably doesn't make a lot of sense. And I understand that the Ken Evans rule of MMA that we're a business, not a meritocracy, is hard for an athlete to understand because in most every other sport, it's meritocracy. You win more games, you go to championship, right?
Right.
They don't all of a sudden go.
They're entertainment businesses, but the meritocracy.
But they don't all of a sudden
effective.
Go. We really like the Bears more, even though they got a terrible record. So therefore,
Chicago's a big market. So why are you going to the playoffs?
They're in the Super Bowl, right? They don't do that.
Eric's a Bears fan. He didn't just put them in the playoffs in his scenario.
I'm going right to the Super Bowl shuffle. If we're
going
to do it,
they're going right to San Francisco.
Going right to San Francisco. But they don't do that. However, in fighting, boxing, in MMA, that's what happens. And some of that showbiz, I think, is hard for an athlete to swallow, and I get it.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you're Damian Maya, how many wins do you need to have? If you're Tyron Woodley, when do you get a title shot?
And up until you get to the UFC, it doesn't matter where you are in the fight business, Bellator, World Series of Fighting, whatever they are.
ONE FC, whatever you want to pick.
Whatever it is, you're essentially winning and you're going to move up because that's the easiest way for those guys to make fights. So, yeah, you get a little bit stuck once you get to the UFC because you can get to an upper level and then all of a sudden, wait a minute, all these other organizations or whatever I've done in my career, win, title shot. Win, title shot. Win, title shot. That's not necessarily the case in the UFC. And also in the case of the UFC, you've got an instance where Tyron Woodley probably could have done win, title shot, except Rory McDonald came in and spoiled the party a little bit.
Yes.
And he lost his title shot there. He's got two wins since that, but that's really what's kind of made him a little more difficult to put right in that spot. I'm not saying he doesn't deserve that spot, but, you've only won two, you're on a two-fight win streak. That doesn't sell as much as maybe Damian Maya, I think, is on four or five fights at this point.
I think it's six.
And I think Tyron would sell better than Damian. I'm not going to
1,000%, but
had to get past his Rory McDonald loss too, Damian Maya.
Yeah, so what do you do? What do you pick, right? If you had to do it right now.
Right now, Carlos Condit, Lawler, put it in June. Do it relatively quick. And I think June is relatively quick. I don't know what the date is for the June pay-per-view. But if you're going to do the rematch, do it relatively quick. And Tyron Woodley can have his shot within the year. Does he have to fight again? Probably in this instance. But again,
Does he fight Damian?
I think that'd be a great fight. That'd be a great fight. And let's just settle it. You know what? I'm sorry, Tyron, this happened. But guess what? No matter who wins this fight, you're going to get the next shot. And then it's going to be really interesting if Carlos wins by 1 point after five rounds and 100 possible points to see if Tyron gets a shot there. But Tyron Woodley, Damian Maya, come on. Damian Maya asked who he has to beat to get the title shot. I think Tyron Woodley's that answer. It's not the answer Tyron Woodley wants to hear.
No, and Maya's been way more agreeable. Like, he's been...
Well, he would be. I mean, he's fourth or fifth at this point, probably in the rankings.
Yeah, so I think he would be up for that fight, and I think that would be really interesting. For whatever reason, the UFC tends to do that anyway, where they put welterweights on the card where the welterweight championship is. They haven't done that as consistently in the other weight classes, but they seem to do it a lot.
And I believe he's your number one contender, but he's not that consensus overwhelming, he's beaten everybody in the division, because he hasn't. He lost to Rory McDonald two fights ago, hasn't fought Damian Maya. So, I mean, there's certainly a little more argument. And dude was personable as hell, and he took everything good-naturedly on that post-fight show, so I feel a little bad, because I'd rather he be a jerk, and then I can go, well, you got to fight everybody else.
Right.
And then get there. He's a nice dude. He's a nice dude. He's professional. He knows what he's talking about. He was gracious. He did the interview with Lawler and it was great. But, I mean, if I'm going to be realistic at it, you took a loss two fights ago, and there's another guy in the top five that has beaten a lot of people, too. So that's your fight. These two just fought 1 point apart. I keep saying that. 1 point out of 100 when you do the math. It doesn't seem that close until you actually figure out the possible points in both the rounds, multiplying by the fighters. So 1 point out of 100 is what differentiated this fight. So I don't have a problem with a rematch, and somebody can explain that to Tyron Woodley in this instance and go, hey, you got to beat another contender here because there's going to be a rematch for this. That all depends on Carlos Condit, because right. I get where he's coming from, because he's a dude. He doesn't want to be in fights necessarily, and the Tyron Woodley fight might be a reason for that. You know what? If I'm not fighting for the title, I don't want to mess with this. I don't want to get my knee knocked off again.
Right, and be out for a year. And,
right. Yeah. There's no sense in that for me at this point in my career. Why am I not fighting for the title? Because if I didn't win the title and I'm not in a championship match, maybe I'm done with this. And I can certainly see his point, because we're starting to get to the point with some of these fighters too, especially like Carlos Condit, where they're not going to fight until they're 45 years old in Bellator.
No.
They know the damage that they've taken, and they're trying to be most effective in their careers.
Well, and I think you see, and I know he's back in action, and honestly, it's probably the fight I'm most looking forward to that's on the books right now. You know, I know these guys see Dominic Cruz, and they go, okay, well, there's the thing to do. And Carlos Condit mm-hmm. is well-spoken. He's a smart guy. They could put him on Fox tomorrow. There's other things for him to do aside from take damage. When you look at Brendan Schaub, mm-hmm. who this, you know, last week he and Brian Callen celebrated, he has been out of the fight game for a year, and his podcast has exploded because he's been able to do this other thing. There are other things for fighters to do aside from take damage Ken Shamrock style till you're 58 years old.
Right.
And I agree with Condit. He's at the point in his life where he shouldn't have to do that stuff unless it's for a title. And so if it's not for a title, I'm with him if he goes, I'm good.
I think it just surprised everybody because he's such a great fighter, and he just turned 31. And, you know, in this, that's relatively the sweet spot at this point. The business is obviously getting younger and more people coming up training MMA as opposed to just jiu-jitsu sure. or just wrestling or just striking. But he's one of those guys that you would have figured he's in a sweet spot for at least another 3 or 4 years, right? 2 or 3 years minimum. And he comes out after this fight, I'm not sure if I want to do this anymore, and I don't necessarily blame him in this instance, because if he's not fighting for the title, why take the risk? I mean, most of his fights in the past, 3 years have been title fights. So if he feels like he's going to be knocked back down 3 or 4 spots, that's 3 or 4 fights he has to come back through. I don't think he's looking at doing that at this point in his career. So it's going to be really interesting to kind of see if this is a negotiating tactic. Never take that out of it, obviously.
Right.
See how real he is about it and see if a championship rematch would be enough to entice him back.
We'll have to wait and see what's going to happen. Co-main event, Stipe Miocic and Andre Arlovsky was an interesting, you know, even for as short as it was a really interesting fight for me from a strategy standpoint that Arlovsky decided to go out with oblique kicks instead of a jab
mm-hmm.
to kind of get his distance was really kind of interesting.
Is that because the last fight was so ugly that he was trying to do something different?
Yeah, but it seemed as if it was easier for Stipe to time the oblique kicks mm-hmm. and know when to put your lights out, which is exactly what he did.
Yeah, I think he took some of the criticism to heart, though, perhaps in that last fight, that ugly win against Frank Mir, and decided, okay, well, let me try to get my way in some way different, and let me try to do something different. Oblique kicks have been the new thing for fighters that don't have a problem with them, so to speak. That's the new hotness for everybody. It's like, I'm going to go in and try to knock your knee out of place.
Right.
It's totally legal. So, and again, I don't have a problem. They're legal in the books. Train against them and know that could happen, and don't put your legs there. I just think he got caught. I think this was going to happen eventually. This is why I immediately called for the title fight as soon as he was in a position to be realistically.
Well, yeah,
because
I mean, I you can see in my book, I wrote down that is the Andre I remember.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that is the Andre I remember that's just what would happen to him.
Yeah, and that's why I also said last week. I said if he wins, you can't really deny him a title shot. Because Stipe's a legit dude in that division, and he's a guy that's going to be fighting for a title shot as well. So it's going to be interesting to see now where the heavyweight division is.
Is it? Do you feel it's unfair to leap off the hype train at this point?
Of Stipe?
Of Andre.
Andre? I don't think it's unfair. I think you have to be realistic, though, and know that he's won quite a few fights in the past 2 years. We go back to him coming back to UFC, and he's, what, 3-1, 4-1?
4-1.
He's 4-1. And, you know, Travis Brown, nobody saw that fight happening. Nobody saw him doing what he did in that fight. He beat Bigfoot. I kind of put him on this track. I think he's still in the mix, but that UFC heavyweight division is so top heavy that it's going to be a tough position. They've still got him, you and your media friends. They've still got him tied at number 3 with Alistair. But again, that's Alistair gets a shot, Stipe gets a shot, Cain Verdun. And that's not even taking Dos Santos into the mix at this point, who didn't do anything this weekend but went down. Poor guy.
Got knocked out.
I mean, yeah, that's
just watching the pay-per-view.
And I kind of get that with all that's happened with Alistair and Andre over the past couple weeks. But, I mean, Junior Dos Santos, Arlovsky. This road becomes a ton harder for Andre Arlovsky because he's an older guy. He was kind of – he had his bit of resurgence, but now to kind of get to that title fight, which may – have been a given after Stipe, you've got to put every one of those dudes there in front of him. You've got to assume he's going to have to fight Alistair. And you've got to assume Junior Dos Santos is in that mix. And you never know if Travis Brown wants to get back in there with him, and he gets a shot at redemption there because he's a guy that was on the track until Arlovsky knocked him off of it. I mean, he was a guy that they wanted to see in there against Verdum or Cain, whoever won.
Right.
And they wanted him to go in there, you know, Ronda in his corner, so to speak. So it's going to be interesting to kind of see how this heavyweight division fleshes out now. We've got Velasquez Verdum in March.
Yes.
I believe that's when it's happening. So
end of February, March, something like that.
Somewhere. So we'll see who wins there. And then, you know, I think Stipe and Alistair are right there.
They said Stipe gets the shot. So Stipe gets the shot.
That's never changed before.
No, never.
Uh-huh.
You've been reading too many Frankie Edgar blogs.
Let's call Misha Tate up real quick.
Right.
See what
ask
happens.
Her how that goes. A couple other fights I wanted to talk about.
I do believe Stipe will get the shot, by the way.
But
things have changed before, and this is going to be a long time because he still has to wait, a month and a half here.
Right.
For that fight to happen.
To see what happens, yeah.
So that puts another 6 weeks in there, and I don't know. We'll see.
So a couple fights I want to talk about before we move on to other things, and that is, one, the return of Michael McDonald against Kanahara. That was the fight on Fox Sports 1. If you missed that and you are a fan of jiu-jitsu at all, Kanahara ends up taking Michael McDonald down and getting into mount and getting him into a submission known as a head and arm choke. So if you picture, he's got his arm wrapped around Michael McDonald's head and his arm. Michael McDonald defends it by doing what's called answering the phone. So if you put your hand to your ear like you're answering the phone, it prevents the choke from happening. And then in the most obscure thing that I think most of us have ever seen, somehow from being nearly submitted, is able to take Kanahara's back and choke him unconscious with a rear naked choke in the sickest transition I have seen probably ever.
Got to be ready in these fights.
I mean, the guy's been off for 2 years. So to see this amazing finish was just... It was a great night of fights, regardless of what happened in the main event and what you feel about the main event. A lot of great fights. The other one I want to talk about, because I know this is a sticking point for you, is the Joe Duffy-Dustin Poirier fight.
What do you mean a sticking point?
We'll get there. Okay. It's the biggest fight ever.
Stay tuned. Eric's going to tell me why I feel the way I do, and I'm not sure how I feel yet. We'll find out now.
The most watched fight on Fight Pass. So as we were talking about last week, they're beginning to build a cadence here of things that you actually want to watch on Fight Pass, so you'll tune in. This was clearly one of them. It was the main event of the Dublin card. Now the main event of the Fight Pass card, which seems like a demotion right up until you get all of these eyeballs to watch this fight.
Okay.
What is the sticking point is in the third round, Joe Duffy goes for a heel hook and Dustin Poirier grabs the fence.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And prevents himself from having any sort of real damage
done. So I didn't see the fight because it was on Fight Pass. I haven't quite... charged it up yet onto the phone.
So, just to set the stage, Dustin Poirier is doing some amazing boxing for most of this fight, and Dustin Poirier in the third has two great opportunities to finish this fight. One is he gets this heel hook, but Dustin Poirier has the fence. No point taken. The ref doesn't do anything even to get his hand off of the octagon.
Okay.
Changes the tempo of what was happening in the third round. And then at the end, the very end, 10 seconds left, Joe Duffy slaps on a triangle and nearly finishes it. It was a super exciting fight, but speaks to this, the two problems that we're having right now in the UFC. One is this judging and understanding a little bit more of the nuance and how we build that into the 10-point must system. And two, can we please, by the middle of 2016, figure out what we're going to do about the fence?
I just think it's the point. I just think it's an immediate point because you've shifted the fight at that point. And it doesn't matter. And I know a couple weeks ago, when the ref put the fighters back in a different position and everything, that everybody hailed that as, oh, great reffing.
With the
I don't remember who it was.
Jacare. It was a Jacare fight.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He got that top, blah, blah, blah. Maybe Jacare wanted the guy in the top position, was going to pull guard. Jacare's a guy who can submit off the bottom.
Right.
So I'm not saying that the guy should be able to grab the fence and then you just call it good. Just take the point. Take the point and stand them back up. Or take the point and let the fighter who was wronged, quote unquote, decide the position. That would stop that stuff real quick, too. If all of a sudden, okay, oh, you grab the fence. Point, opposing fighter, what's your position?
So it's like wrestling, right?
Yeah.
Where do you want to start?
Yeah. You want top? You want back? You want both standing? What do you want? It's like a fighter who's standing and gets to pull both guys back up. You're in the dominant position, and if you decide as a striker you don't want to strike with him lying on the ground anymore, you get to pull him up. Why not be able to do that if somebody's actually committed a foul? Let's do that with all the fouls. Let's figure it out. Inadvertent eye pokes, inadvertent groin strikes. You know, let the fighter who has been wrong, quote-unquote, pick the position. That's going to get a fighter to stop real quick, too. Because if you're a striker and you hate going to the ground, and you don't want to be down there, and that's probably why you're grabbing the fence in the first place, if you know that if you even incidentally grab it, you're going to the ground for sure, that's going to be a little more apt to stop you. Not only are you going to the ground, but this guy gets top. This guy gets mount. I don't know if you want to start fights putting people in mount. That'd be interesting. But maybe this guy gets top position.
That's a hell of a penalty.
Wouldn't it, though? Wouldn't it be, though? Yeah, for fence grabbing, do it. Let the guy take mount if he wants. But no, maybe letting the wrong fighter choose the position and taking the point, it's not that hard. Again, if you do it consistently, guys aren't going to do this. They're not. They'll learn. They're athletes. It's like everybody in the NFL bitching about hitting to the crown of the head of the opponent. These guys are athletes. You change your target zone. I know things are moving fast. I know things are moving quickly, and some say, well, you just can't aim for somebody's torso because you never know where that guy's going to go. Well, guess what? In the NFL, most guys have now changed their zone because they don't want to take a 15-yard penalty for their team. They figured it out. Trust me, UFC fighters, if they're going to eat a point every time that they grab a cage, they'll figure it out. Their coaches will be screaming at them. They won't have to worry about the judges and their points taken away. The coaches will be screaming for them to get their hands off the fence and not to grab the fence because they don't want to lose the point. It's really, really simple, and it's really interesting that it's allowed within the rules, but none of the refs really do it. They can take the point. We don't have to change the rules. We don't have to go to commissions.
They just got
to
do it.
We don't have to do anything. We just have to take the point when you grab the fence. And that's like one of the few things where I don't think there's anybody arguing for it or anybody saying, oh, well, it's really incidental, because you can have the incidental eye poke and the groin strike. You don't have a lot of incidental grabbing of the cage. You keep your hand flat. You don't grab the damn cage.
Well, and that's what they're going to say is incidental, but I think that's more just being sneaky. You know, you flat palm it for a second, and then the ref is looking, and your fingertips are in it. Then you flat palm it, then your fingertips are in it.
Squeeze, let go, squeeze. Yeah, this is easy. This is easy. That's why it's so frustrating.
And it was, you know, not that I don't think Dustin Poirier deserved it. It was a great fight. They both looked great. It was a fantastic fight, and that's why people wanted to tune in to see it. But I think in that third, when Joe Duffy was going for broke, he had one chance in particular spoiled by the rules and the other one spoiled by the clock. That just happens. But fantastic fight. If you've not seen it, go check it out on Fight Pass. Speaking of fantastic fights we might not get to see, rumors are getting very, very hot and heavy that we are going to see Rafael Dos Anjos and Conor McGregor, as even Frankie Edgar's going, I'm prepared for them to tell me this any day now, that I'm not getting this title shot, that he's bouncing to 55.
Now, how is this going to work? Because we complain enough, and I know you were really upset about this Holly Holm Ronda thing, which we'll talk a little bit about emo Ronda in a couple minutes probably. but I know you were really upset about this weight. That just gets doubled if you have a guy who says he wants to jump divisions. Do you hold him to a 6-month schedule and essentially say, okay, if you're going to do this, you're going to have to fight every 3 months then. You're never going to leave camp. because I don't think this is going to be fair to that division if the UFC's letting him jump around and essentially hold that belt hostage at 45,
you know,
for a year at a time.
Now that I've had some distance, and you know, we did the show after he beat Jose Aldo, and I've kind of been able to marinate in that a bit. I don't care what he wants to do, but I'm now finding myself agreeing with you that you've got to defend it first.
Mm-hmm.
You don't get to go up to 155 because technically you're not actually
you've never been the defending champion.
You're not the defending champ, right? So technically you're not the decorated defending champ at 45 in order to gain that right to go up to 55. Now, if you're going to go up to 55 and let's say fight Tony Ferguson, okay, we're having a different discussion. But if you're jumping up and you're fighting Rafael Dos Anjos, I feel that you should have had to defend the belt at 45 and started a legacy first before you just randomly...
Well, what happens if he gets run out of 155 and then has to go back to 45? And I know he's one of the biggest stars in the UFC right now. I won't jump on board with the biggest quite yet. But...
He does have his own beer right now.
He's not... he's not BJ Penn, who could withstand taking a loss in a different division and still being considered a champion.
But I believe,
in his own,
you know, as we talked about this, I believe when he was dancing between 55 and 70, he had the belt and beaten 10 guys.
Well,
at that
point. And the other thing too is you're jumping 15 pounds. So you take a loss 15 pounds up, which is really guys at 200 pounds probably
right.
cutting to 170.
Right, yes.
You know, it doesn't look as bad. Conor here is only going to be jumping up 10 pounds. This becomes more like the boxing situation. I think where they have those 6 and 7 pound divisions.
Yes.
You got beat up by a dude that was 10 pounds heavier. He's not that much bigger than you. This wasn't a big leap either.
Well, he's not bigger than you at all because Connor's cutting a lot of weight, which is where this discussion
right,
comes
exactly.
from. So he's not bigger than you at all.
So are you going to keep cutting back down to 145? I mean, this is a dude. I know he's not undefeated, but he's got a little bit of that undefeated shine as far as the UFC goes.
Sure.
And I think you take some of the shine off that apple at this point if he goes up to 155 and he just gets beaten up. Which I think is a real possibility. Every time I've been wrong about Conor McGregor, so don't take that to the bank, but you can't deny that's a real possibility at this point.
I don't think it's any different, though, than being wrong about Rafael Dos Anjos. I think at every turn, he's not, to use a marketing term, right, he's not as sexy as Conor McGregor. People aren't climbing on to jump on the Dos Anjos
right.
bandwagon, even though they should, but every time he fights, everyone's like, ah, Cerrone's got this one. Ah, Pettis has got this one. Ah, Henderson's got this one. Right? Nobody goes, Rafael Dos Anjos, he's the man at this point, because he's the man at this point. Look at it this way. Donald Cerrone is now fighting at 170.
Right. He doesn't want to mess with it anymore.
He's fighting Tim Means at 170. What does that tell you about who you fight when you fight Rafael Dos Anjos?
Mm-hmm.
To your point, he's going to jump up 15 pounds because that seems easier than trying to fight Rafael Dos Anjos again.
Yeah, so this is going to be interesting in this division. I know Anthony Pettis has come out and called out other fighters for calling out Conor, which I don't know. Are we doing call-out inception?
Well, we are doing Christopher Nolan call-out inception. I think some of that comes from the fact, though, that this is one of those years that Anthony Pettis is either going to be his second go-around is a breakout star,
mm-hmm.
or he's going to end up being Benson Henderson.
Oh, yeah. And those are two different sides of a coin for sure.
You know what I'm saying? Like, if he goes and loses some more and can't get this title back. And
Benson Henderson, though, very happy you mentioned his name because everybody, oh, he's coming off a win. The UFC is going to have to re-sign him.
Right.
Crickets.
Still waiting.
Crickets.
But so what I'm saying is, you know, the Showtime kick, all that stuff aside, him manhandling Benson Henderson in a guillotine choke, that stuff is awesome until you meet a guy who takes your lunch, which is what happened to him. And
yeah.
So I think he's calling it out because, again, we're still seeing the echoes of Chael Sonnen in 2016 as people just
so
feel.
So is his call out his way to call out Conor if Conor's going to be at 55?
Maybe. I don't really know. I just think it's a way to get your name back in the conversation when people mention Conor so that people remember that. Because when was the last time Pettis fought?
Oh, I don't know. I don't remember off the top of my head.
Right. So, I mean, here's how you get your name back in the conversation.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to sort of be on Conor McGregor.
So they're not shine stealing?
Yes. Yes. Stealing that shine.
So is Ronda Rousey trying to shine steal from Holly Holm with her emo Instagram post this week?
So set it up for people.
For those of you that aren't aware, Holly Holm just re-upped with the UFC.
Yes.
She also went on the MMA Hour with Ariel Helwani, hour 7, I believe it was, of the show.
Where...
I love the show.
I do love
sometimes
the show, but
it's just
man,
so long.
It's so hard to listen to the whole thing.
Oh, you got well. I mean, who's got that time? So after
when Joe Rogan seems like it's a shorter podcast,
right, exactly.
You were doing it wrong.
And that's the one where Joe Rogan's talking about like sleep deprivation,
right?
And,
yes,
know, on it. So Ronda Rousey, after the Holly Holm announcement that she's re-upped with the company and that the next fight announcement was coming soon, posted a Shakespeare quote, which says, "I was adored once too," and that was it. And you know, vague booking is already
yes
one of my pet peeves. These quote boxes are another one. I don't know what Ronda could possibly be pissed about because they're doing backflips, it sounds like, to make the fight happen on her schedule so she can go do her Marky Mark movie. And, yeah, you didn't know that?
Which is, I'm trying to remember, is the Marky Mark movie her biopic or which is the Marky Mark movie?
No, I think she's working in another movie with Marky Mark.
Why wouldn't you?
I'd much rather her
because it worked out so well before doing seven movies and trying to defend your title.
That's exactly what I'm wondering. Like, what is she bitching about? She's getting to do what she wants to do. And God bless her, transition to the movies. Transition to WWE if you want. I mean, she should do, you know, a movie with John Cena. He looks like Marky Mark ate Marky Mark.
Yes.
That's what he said.
In Trainwreck.
So you're getting to do what you want to do and fight on your timeline. Are you bitching about this? I mean, I'm not trying to call her out, so to speak, but really, what does she want out of the UFC at this point?
Well, and I think given the, you know, this isn't Jose Aldo. And by that, I mean, so losing in 13 seconds, I think you have a leg to stand on where you can say, what did we really learn? Right? Mm-hmm. It's a lucky punch. Mm-hmm. He didn't practice. Whatever you want to say from that standpoint, I think Aldo's got a podium to speak from if he wanted to. He has yet to do that, but if he wanted to, he could. Getting completely, completely destroyed for 8 solid minutes and then getting KO'd, mm-hmm. I don't know that you get to stand up and going, I was once adored too, because you got destroyed.
Right.
What you should be doing is going back into the gym and figuring out how to solve the equation or doing what you said and go to movies and WWE because you're not in a position right now.
But she is. Here's the interesting thing about her emo little post. She actually is. She's in a position to do everything she seems to want to do, and she seems upset about it. I get it. That's the attitude that Ronda brought into the game, and she's probably going to need to keep that attitude, like everybody's against me. I get that. Realistically, it's just not true.
No, everybody still wants to love you. They still want to love you. I just think you've got to figure out how to either manage your schedule and be successful with said schedule or figure something else out because it didn't work this last time around.
Yeah.
You got outclassed.
The only issue we've heard, and this goes back to your Aldo reference, Aldo, we didn't learn anything. It was 13 seconds. He caught me. I didn't know what happened after that fight, but it was only 13 seconds. What we've essentially heard, and again, this isn't from Ronda herself, but everybody around her, including Dana White, she was really tired from making movies. So is making two more movies and waiting till July the best move at this point if you want to continue fighting, if you want to be quote-unquote adored? I don't know. All I know is Holly Holm's drawing some big crowds. All I know is a lot of people are starting to pay a lot more attention to Holly Holm, and I said this would happen months ago when everybody was freaking out about them losing their quote-unquote star in Ronda Rousey. Look, Holly Holm can be a star, too.
She is not Ronda Rousey, though.
She's
I'm going to
no.
argue with you to the day
no,
you die.
Did I say she was Ronda
no,
Rousey?
No, but I just...
But this isn't the world's caving in.
No. It's
Ronda Rousey isn't the woman's champ.
It's not. What I would say is if I'm Ronda Rousey, July does... I mean, you get to do everything you want to do. I understand all those things. July, I don't feel, is in your favor. Because you've got two movies to do and everything that goes around those two movies,
mm-hmm.
plus trying to figure out how to get a camp in there, plus trying to figure out how to do the press for said...
A lot of people think she's going to be back at WrestleMania, too.
And she's going to be back at WrestleMania because The Rock is back at WrestleMania. You know, so doing all the press for 200, doing WrestleMania, doing all of those things. And guess what? Holly Holm has none of those obligations.
Right.
Holly Holm is in the gym from now until July.
She's going to club or lang your ass.
Yes, she's going to train the entire time.
You're training with your shiny robe and the cameras. She's down in a basement doing chin-ups on a bar.
Yeah, well, and what happened in that fight? You saw somebody who's been boxing for 15 years school somebody who's been boxing for 18 months. And mm-hmm. that's not going to change between now and July.
Yeah, I don't think Holly Holm's going to forget how to box before July. The interesting thing, though, again, and this is what very frustrating about this emo little post, and I know that's what Instagram's for, so I shouldn't get this worked
it's
up over it.
Really what it's for, but okay.
Well, I mean, yeah, come on. A little bit of self-indulgence, fine. That's what all the internet's
self-indulgence, sure, but being whiny about...
But
like,
what's funny about the whole thing...
Sometimes people love me, too.
Is Holly... That's why it's so frustrating. Holly's, like, trying to set this up for her. Like basically saying, hey, if it's going to be a rematch, it's not till July. That's what UFC is telling me. I'd rather have a fight sooner. If this isn't set in stone, I want to fight sooner. So, I mean, it's interesting. You can hear in Holly Holm's interviews that she has to pivot and move around and maybe not do what she wants in concession to every damn thing Ronda's doing.
Sure.
So don't tell me that they're not still doing backflips for you, because she was on the MMA Hour, Hour 7, and said, hey, I don't want to wait till July. That's not good for me. But if it's a rematch, that's what's going to happen. It's not set in stone, though. So she was alluding to the fact that there may be a fight announcement coming soon, which makes it very interesting. We're not set in stone. If Holly Holm doesn't know about a rematch, that tells me Ronda has just not committed to the rematch yet. So are we really waiting for Ronda Rousey to get through this BS, make movies, go to WrestleMania, and get on Instagram and bitch about things before we make this rematch? Because this, I will now agree with you, because this was a couple weeks ago where I said, no, you wait for the rematch if it's going to happen. If we don't know all these things, this is a jerk move by the UFC to basically dangle Holly Holm out there for God knows how long while somebody makes movies, somebody bitches on Instagram, and somebody does what they want to do and still pretends that the world's against them. I don't agree with that at all. So I was really surprised when Holly Holm said that there would be a match announcement coming soon, because everywhere else we've heard, oh, the rematch is happening in July. And I said, if that's the case, yeah, you just wait for that. I know it's not ideal. Ronda Rousey's still one of the biggest stars in the world. You don't think she's Ronda Rousey, so you wait a little bit, too.
Well, I'm just saying it.
And I know that wasn't your argument to wait, but
that's not my argument to wait. But I'm saying if that indeed is happening, if Holly Holm goes out and pastes Miesha Tate in 2 minutes,
mm-hmm.
All that does is make that rematch better.
Yes, but I mean, Miesha Tate, that would be the match you're looking at, but like, we have to do some fantasy booking. Miesha Tate's not going to be dumb enough to go in there and think, I've been striking for 18 months, so I'm going to go up again. You know, Miesha Tate's going to try to take that thing to the ground. This is going to turn into, and I'm not saying Holly can't handle her on the ground.
Right.
She obviously had one of the best takedown artists in the world in the cage with her and basically never got taken down. It was very interesting to kind of watch that fight. So to count Holly Holm out is not what I'm doing here. But to think Miesha Tate's going to go in there and look like Ronda did, that's another person. All she does is train. She doesn't do media. She doesn't make movies. She's pissed at the world, probably for real reasons.
Right.
She's fought essentially everybody in that top 10 and beaten them all except for Ronda Rousey. So, fight fans, that's a much more interesting fight. Casual fans, the fans that are going to shell out the dollars for Ronda Rousey, your wife, my wife, people like that. Oh, who's that? Is Ronda in there? No. Oh, I want to see Ronda Rousey fight.
Right.
Fight fans, of course. Miesha Tate, Holly Holm, yeah, I want to see that next as a fight fan. Money-wise, attention-wise, and the best thing for business, so to speak, is going to be Rousey and Holm. But it's starting to bother me that we're now just over 5 months from that, and it's not official?
Right.
I really?
Mean, you know, almost midway through January. We don't have it booked. I mean, technically, we don't really have anything booked for UFC 200, which is weird. But this one should certainly be booked because they've been talking about it since it happened.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's why I said since it happened, okay, you wait. Now we're in a window. We're not only in a window where that should have already been announced and you figure out your crap, Ronda Rousey. Where are you? Are you making movies? Are you not doing this? What's going on? We're getting to a point where if Holly wanted to fight sooner, she can't.
Right.
I mean, because what Holly wanted, the initial reports,
was February,
she
right?
wanted a March fight.
March.
She would fight Ronda again in July. Well, if you've got a March fight and it's even in the middle of March, camp starts in a week or two.
Right.
So I think that's also what she was alluding to. I wouldn't be surprised if by the end of this week we know for sure Holly Holm's next fight. Because if she wants a fight in March, that camp's got to start soon. And she's going to take it serious, too. And I'm not saying Ronda didn't. But Ronda had a lot of things pulling at her in a lot of different directions. You made the point. Holly Holm does not have that. So Holly Holm wants to go in there. And if she wins, she's going to start building on this legacy. She's going to do another round on all the morning shows that
yep.
I told you she would do, and she has done. So it's going to be very interesting to kind of see how things play out next couple days in this women's division.
And as always, we'll keep up to date on everything. Nothing really of note happening this weekend. Next weekend, Sunday night, you get Dominic Cruz and TJ Dillashaw, which I am super excited about. So we'll talk about that next week. You can catch up with us on Twitter and Facebook. Search WOW Show. It is Way of the Warrior. It's your MMA show.